I've been telling y'all, my friends out in Radio Land, for several days now that that album is a killer. That's from the new one by Leon Foster Thomas. The album's called Metamorphosis. I have Foster here in the studio, here in the igloo, as you may better know it. I'm going to ask him now to tell us a little bit about the tune to which we were just listening.
Oh, good night, everybody. The name of that song is called Midnight Refrain. And the inspiration came from those speakeasies from back in the day in Louisiana, swing dancing. So hence that you had that little second line kind of rhythm from the drums. And just the word refrain, the line, just to get you singing, you know, over and over. So that's where that whole thing came from, you know, so came up pretty good.
I think so. And one of the things that I really dig about having people come up to the igloo for conversation is watching them as they listen to their music. And it seems to me, well, you just said it came out pretty good. You still like it.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing, because that's the finished product. The new album, Metamorphosis, from Leon Foster Thomas, actually does not drop until the 3rd of June. Mm-hmm. However, there's a pre-release concert coming up this Saturday night at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center. Leon Foster Thomas will be performing down there. And if you go to the pre-release concert, you can also grab yourself a pre-release copy of the album Metamorphosis.
Yes, exactly.
So, let's see. I guess we should talk about the gig now. We'll come back. We'll talk about you a little bit later. But
sure.
Tell my friends a little bit about what they can expect on Saturday.
You can expect just a great deal of fun. Really good music. Great musicians. We have John DeVersa, Armando Gola, young David Leon, Martin Bejarano, Mike Pilot on drums. So we have a really, really great cast of musicians, and also special guest Sammy Figueroa. So I'm very excited about that.
That's an all-star cast, is what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And you said it's beginning to be real to you now. You've been working on this album. Did you start work on this one immediately after coming off of Brand New Mischief, or...?
Actually, no. It took some time. as of late, I've more been waiting on the inspiration.
That makes sense.
You know, and there's times when you can just go down and just start writing. But this one, I wanted to take some time, let Brand New Mischief soak in for a little bit. And, you know, just I think it was like a certain period of time in 2014, around like the fall, I just started like writing like crazy. You know, so tunes like, you know, on tunes on the album, such as like Gulf of Paria, where I was on a flight, literally on a flight, and I just grabbed my pad and just started writing out whatever rhythm and what I was hearing in my head. You know, so, and I was just storing up ideas from on my phone to the pad to the computer, whichever way, just to make sure that I don't lose the ideas at all, you know. So, and it was exciting for a big period of time, from, let's say, from August till December. It was just new music. I wrote more than enough music for two albums. So, and we, you know, just picking 10, I was like, you know, let's just go with 10. So we're just going to leave some off for another time. So very excited about this now.
So Metamorphosis Part 2 is kind of sitting on a shelf somewhere, yeah, waiting to be born.
Yeah, you could say so.
Yeah, now Brand New Mischief was inspired, and I guess the tunes were all connected by the birth, the arrival of your little daughter, Annecy, who's, I started saying, not quite so little anymore, but she's still little. How, mm-hmm. How old is Annecy now?
She's 5.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, that makes me about 114. But that album was all about her, in a manner of speaking. Mm-hmm. And this album, Metamorphosis, is all about you.
Yeah. It's about my maturation, you know, growing up, you know, going from the stage where I was really experimenting or just trying to figure things out to where, not that I know everything, no, but to a point where I'm comfortable with myself, comfortable with what I'm writing. The music literally has just matured so much for me. When I presented the music to the musicians, and they, you know, they were, you know, they're the ones been playing the music for a while. They're like, man, this, the music is different. Your music is different this time around, you know. And with the implementation of adding the horns and all these other things, it's like, I really wanted to put that forward. Really, you know, also with the instrument itself, still a lot of folks don't see the steel pan within the ranks that it's been being played now. So with the music just changing and music throughout, like you can hear a little bit from the Robert Glasper's to the A.T.N. Childs to the Ben Williams and stuff, where there is a bit of a change within the music, and I thought this was the right time. You know, Christian Scott as well, he's been doing some stuff too. So there's a really nice change, and everything has been changing for a bit.
Thank you for saying the words steel pan, because I think I forgot to mention that. You know, I guess I figure when I have a person who's known as a steel pan virtuoso in the igloo, everybody should know that steel pan is his instrument. But no, Leon Foster Thomas is a steel pan virtuoso. We were talking about that, or I was talking with my friends about that last night here on the air. You know, how I love being in South Florida because I got steel pan virtuosi who can come up and talk with me about their music. But let me back up a little bit to the difference, I guess, between the last album and this album. You say this is all about showcasing your maturation, and the cats who played with you on this album say, yeah, the music is different. Can you tell us different how and what brought that on?
It was just a natural, just what I was listening. I've been listening to whoever came to mind, but I have like my favorite, like my Keith Jarrett, my Joshua Redman, and Terrence Blanchard. I've been listening to these guys religiously, and I think it started to rub off on me, you know. And I started to put myself in some circles where just the vibe of other musicians, you know, happened. You know, I spent, within the last 6 years, I started spending my summers in New York. So, you know, going to different jam sessions and doing different gigs with certain people, it really helped influence where I wanted to be, you know, musically, and what I needed to do, and that came off in the music, you know. So it really, really, really helped transform where I am.
And you got these horns. They were part of that whole process. Can you tell me about the decision to incorporate horns, to write for horns?
I always wanted to do it. I think it just wasn't the time, you know. So with hearing the inspiration for some of this music, I started hearing like a lot of horns. I mean, I wanted to write for a big horn section, but I wanted to make sure that to keep the band as small as possible, but to make sure that when we write, you know, it's very effective. Thinking about who's going to play them, especially, you know, was really important. So on that last recording, well, throughout the recordings, you're going to hear Jean Kaz on trumpet.
Jean will be up here next week, by the way.
Nice. His album, Amide, is really good. And also we had David Palmer on tenor saxophone. And we had special guest John DeVersa on a few. So it really helped open my ears a little bit. And getting their feedback as horn players, because I'm a pan player, and yes, we write for them, but understanding how, you know, how they play, you know, and with the breath and all these things, and tonguing for the trumpet and everything like that. So we wanted to, it was a really good learning experience for me, and understanding what I was hearing in my head, seeing it in how they're playing physically, it was a really good experience.
Speaking of really good experiences, I remember a couple of years ago seeing you with the Melton Mustafa Big Band.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember at the time that that show, the Sunny Isles Beach Jazz Festival, was put together. There was some question from the city of Sunny Isles about that steel pan with the big band. And I'm thinking, well, why not? You know, but sure, ask Melton. And
yeah.
Apparently Melton thought that was cool, and it was extremely cool.
Oh, yeah.
So you think we might one day see the Leon Foster Thomas Big Band?
That's a good idea. Maybe.
And I'm thinking also, where was it? I guess I read on your website a quote from somebody talking about how he makes his steel pan sound as if it belonged in jazz all along. Excuse me? You know, I don't get that. Let's see. Hendrik Merkens, the harmonica player, mm-hmm. the world's tallest harmonica player who doubles on vibes, told me when he was last up here that he believes every instrument has a home.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that. You know, he said every instrument has a home, a genre of music in which it, you know, is most comfortable and best used. He said, except the piano. But mm-hmm. I don't know that. I think pretty much... Well, what do you think about that, and what possessed you to bring the steel pan to jazz?
I really just thought it's as universal as everything else. Not everybody is fortunate to play a piano or play drums or a trumpet or saxophone. To me, the pan was the only thing I could have expressed myself musically. I couldn't say, well, okay, I don't want to learn that. You know, that's not going to make it happen. It was just there, and I never liked the instrument.
Really?
I never liked the instrument.
Why not?
It didn't make sense to me as a child, you know. And I got introduced to the instrument at the age 13 by a friend, Roger Charles. And then I was like, okay, they were playing a popular song.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, whoa, okay, I like this, you know. But being at the age, you know, you had kids playing pan already younger than 13, so it was a bit embarrassing for me not knowing how to play, you know. So I went on from there, and, you know, the more I got into it, it was just like the more I just felt myself doing it more and hearing the music that is inside of me coming out. So back to like thinking, well, yeah, it may have a home here, but I believe if we're able to speak the language properly, you know, and in whatever context, I believe it could work. You know, if had I thought that it couldn't, well, then I wouldn't be here today.
I was thinking right after I asked that question, well, of course, you know, it's your instrument. So mm-hmm. wherever you belong,
exactly,
the pan belongs.
Mm-hmm.
My guest tonight is steel pan virtuoso Leon Foster Thomas. He has a new album coming out. It's called Metamorphosis. That will be released on the 3rd of June. But if you attend his pre-release concert coming up this Saturday at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center, that's at 10950 Southwest 211th Street in Culture Bay. Culture Bay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Culture Bay.
Cutler Bay. You can buy a copy there in advance. Showtime for that is 8:30 p.m. on this Saturday, May 21st. Foster, let's get another tune in from the album now. Please pick one for me.
Sure. Let's go with Gulf of Paria.
Okay, let's see. I think that's going to be number 2 this time, since number 3 was actually Midnight Refrain.
It's going to be number 4.
Oh, okay. It gets even better. All right, please talk about that while I find number 4.
Gulf of Paria is was written in with connection to a body of water between Trinidad and Venezuela. And it's just the calmness of the ocean where it gives the instrument, it gives the piece its life. The bass line you would hear, like the rocking of a boat. And it's just such a calm thing. There was once an oil spill not too long ago in the Gulf. And it made me think about all the wildlife and everything within there, the fishes and everything like that, how it got spoiled to a point, you know. And so the tune was a reflection of how beautiful the Gulf is. Thank you.
This is WLRN and HD1 Miami, Fort Lauderdale, WKWM and HD1 Marathon, Key West. It's 11 o'clock. This is Evening Jazz, the 2 for Tuesday edition. We have Leon Foster Thomas here. Just listened to a track from his wonderful forthcoming album, Metamorphosis. And you know, I would have been content, Foster, to just sit here and keep listening to the album, but that happens later. We'll get to that a little later, you know, after the release date. But as I have said, that album is available if you go down to the pre-release concert, which happens this Saturday, May 21st, showtime 8:30 p.m. at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center, info at smdcac.org. Wow, that was lovely. And I was thinking, sitting here feeling quite American, you know, a little bit lacking in my geography. I hadn't even heard of the Gulf of Paria. Mm-hmm. And to hear you describe it and to play about it and then to hear about the oil spill, I have a whole mess of mixed emotions about that now.
Yeah.
But I want to thank you for that tune.
Thank you.
Let's go to Trinidad, shall we?
Sure.
I think I probably need to ask you to talk about the pan a little bit, because just as not everybody has the opportunity to grow up playing the piano or saxophone, not everybody grows up familiar with the steel pan.
Exactly. The pan is a really interesting instrument, especially me now getting into it at a late time. I would call it late in my time, where came out of slavery, you know, came out, you know, you had like from the tambo bamboos, which was the first, well, actually second stage of the steel pan. Because first you had the African drums, and when the drums were banned, then we came, you know, they had the tambo bamboo and stuff like that.
And the drums were banned
because they were, they believed they were sending messages, you know, and which it was.
So we can't have you Negroes talking
exactly
to each other.
Exactly. So instead of having a revolt, let's ban the drums. Let's ban those drums. You know, from time to time, you know, all these would happen as they would tell, you know, you had the storytelling, which, you know, the griot, which was, you know, now with the calypsonian, that was the messenger, the person telling all the stories politically or what have you, or making fun of the slave masters and stuff like that. Not to go too long on it or too, you know, let me summarize this a little bit. When we, you know, from the tambo bamboos, you got to the steel pan.
I think you better tell us about the tambo bamboos.
Yeah. Now the tambo bamboos were instruments just made out of bamboos.
Bamboo.
Right? Different lengths, and it was all about your knocking. You had different lengths, and you had everyone knocking at specific rhythms. And they would use a shorter stick to play it. And while that is happening, you're hearing different chants. So you hear that check, 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 check. And, you know, so that's the rhythm of the tambo bamboo. And then you had, like, the male voices or the lead voice singing whatever chant. And then you have the reply from the other people, or actually the other folks that gathered around to partake with in the rhythm itself. Because all of really Trinidad, the music, it's really about a rhythm, the rhythm of the people, you know, and the pan is a huge representation of the people, of the struggle, you know. Steel pan, I don't think the guys that came up with, you know, that came up with this, or I would more say that innovated this instrument. There wasn't really any fixed thing as to, oh, we're going to make the new invention. No, I just think this thing just came up. And everybody played a part in terms of what they thought the instruments would sound like. And funny enough, an orchestra. You had an orchestra where you had the bass pans, you have the cello pans, the guitar pans, and the lead pans and whatnot. And to a full orchestra, patterned after conventional orchestra, and from there, you know, it just took off. It really just took off. You had, and I must mention some of the inventors and innovators like Anthony Williams, who is still alive today. He was well known for his discipline and the Pan Am North Stars, which was one of the top bands back in the day, you know. And he is responsible for what you call, I think, the spider web steel pan, or what we call now the fourth or fifth lead pan. And he has, you know, diagrams, and he won so many different awards and stuff like that. I had the opportunity of meeting Tony Williams a couple of years ago. The other person would be Dr. Ellie Manette. You know, he's still alive as well at West Virginia University, and they have like their whole steel pan factory.
Wait, hold it.
Yeah, yeah. At the University of West Virginia.
I love this country. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. from Ellie, I mean, well, you had his brother, Birdie Manette, you know. Ellie was actually the younger brother. And then you had to Rudolph Charles. They call him the man with the hammer. There's a Calypso song in his name, sung to him, written and sung by David Michael Rudder. And it's called The Hammer. Where the man with the hammer gone? And, you know, it's all about, he was one of the most really, like, really adventurous individual to me. He created pans. There's a pan called a rocket pan. There's a xylophone pan, and it's all about getting a different sound.
Okay, yeah. I am deeply curious now about the rocket pan and the xylophone pan, for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, whatever sound he wanted to get out of that, you know, I mean, and the band he was connected with was Desperado Steel Orchestra. Desperados is located in Laventil, which is in Port of Spain, Trinidad. And one of the top bands, they travel the world and did from classical concerts to carnivals and everything like that. And but Rudolph Charles was just one of those well respected individuals. You know, can't name everybody, but you know, those were some that really stuck out to me as a pan player. And knowing these guys, it gives us an idea of like where we were to where we are now.
I read that the steel pan is the only musical instrument. I'm curious about that. I guess that perhaps the best way to put it anyway, what I read was that the pan was the only musical instrument invented in the 20th century.
Yeah.
Perhaps I should say, or perhaps that might more accurately be described as the only acoustic musical instrument.
I would, yes. I was now going to defer to that.
Because I got to thinking about all those other things.
There's a lot of instruments being created.
Mm-hmm. But I also read, and you'll tell me if I'm wrong, that to this day, the preferred base or the preferred way to start making a steel pan is from a discarded 55-gallon drum.
Yeah. There's a the thing about the name of the instruments and stuff like that. People, you know, it's steel drum, and people believe that it really started from the oil drum. Not really. I had to do some research on that. I asked around to some people, and it was literally pans, biscuit tins, and all the, those were like the first things used to make the instruments, which then went on to the oil drums and everything like that. So, you know, this big argument of like, oh, it's steel drum and this, you know, we know it as pan, steel pan, and really getting that information from some of the people that I had to go and do some research with, and some folks that actually lived it, you know, and it was very violent back in the day. Pan was only associated with the bad boys. Yeah. A young girl wasn't really allowed to be within the band, you know. And
where was jazz born in this country?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
So, you know, and, you know, it's a vagabond instrument and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And out of that, it was one of the most beautiful things that ever came out, you know, out of the rough, you know.
But this instrument didn't make sense to you as a kid.
No.
I can understand that. But can you recall what it was about it that didn't make sense to you initially?
Well, around that time, and you know, in the earliest, Pan was playing more classical music, and I did not have a music teacher growing up. You know, the only music teacher I had was my father. My house was all music, but African music, calypso music. So you're hearing, when you're watching TV and the commercial came on, or in between a show, they would play a steel orchestra playing like a Beethoven or something. It's like, ah, oh, Pan again, you know. And, you know, myself and my older brother, we would change the channel.
Ah, youth.
Yeah. So, you know, I look back at that and I laugh, you know, but, you know, all about the education of it. Now you're having more Pans in schools and everything like that because it's really important. There are some reading books back then, you know, we had some reading books at every standard within the primary school year where they had so many information about the culture of Trinidad and Tobago. So that really helped me out a lot. You know, I think it's called the Republic Readers, you know, Republic Reader 1 to 5 or what have you.
And my Trini friends are
smiling. Yeah. I think the guy that wrote the book, his name was Frank M. Porter. That's to tell you how we had to know the books. But it's very good. Those are very good books that had so much about the social economics of Trinidad and music and everything. There one had a calypso by Mighty Sparrow, Education, and we had to recite it, you know. And so, you know, those books help me out a lot, you know. And it spoke about the people who came before us, like the Amerindians to the Africans to the indentured workers and everything like that. So, you know, that whole timeline and everything like that worked out.
Okay, so you developed a respect through education.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Do you remember when it was or how it happened that the pan became your instrument?
Mm. I think from day one. Kids don't do this when, you know, don't break school. I did it. I was so into it, and I was so into music that the band I was playing with at the time was Fonclair Steel Orchestra, and I would borrow a pan, and we lived in a squatting area, and I didn't have a stand, so the windows was a big plywood, and you push it open, and I put two nails on either side of the window and hung the pan up between the windows. My mother, she would go to work before 8. School started at 8:30. So instead of me going to school, I would just hang around a little bit and then practice, put the radio on and played whatever came to the radio. And that was my utmost, that started that whole love affair with music, actually.
And how long were you able to get away with that?
Oh. Long enough. I don't think she ever knew, you know.
Really? Okay.
She never. When she got home, I was done practicing and everything like that, you know.
And the neighbors never gave you up.
No,
okay.
I mean,
they must have dug what you were doing from the start.
Maybe, you know. I had a friend that she, because we lived right behind the school that I was going to, and she told me her teacher was like, I wonder why this guy don't stop playing this pan and go to school. You know, so
yeah, it's funny now. Not so funny at the time.
Yeah, but you know, I think I was pretty smart then. You know, and it kind of helped me out. But there was just that passion for music, and we didn't have any much of an outlet for music growing up in the Caribbean. Your parents, you have to be a doctor, lawyer, whatever, academics, and all that kind of stuff. Music is a hobby,
mm-hmm.
You know, and being able to pursue my dream, then, you know, it worked out really well. You know, coming out here, getting a scholarship and stuff like that.
I was going to ask you about that.
Mm-hmm.
You came to South Florida to study at Florida Memorial University,
mm-hmm.
under Melton Mustafa with a scholarship. How did that happen?
Well, actually, I came to study popular music.
Not quite under Melton, I guess.
No, excuse me, and. This was with Dr. Dorn Batson, and I was
Another estimable educator.
Yeah. And it was for playing drum set. I was playing drum set for the steel band.
Mm-hmm.
And my instrument, the pan, was under the bed. And every time I heard the jazz band, I was like really itching to take the pan out and play. So one day I asked Mr. Mustafa, I know you can't remember this, but I went to him and I said, can I play with the jazz band? And he looked at me, he's like, can you play? And I said, I'd leave that to you to decide, you know. And from the first day he told me I auditioned for the band, that was it. That was it, you know.
But you didn't know anything about jazz
until then. I mean, we knew what jazz was. We knew what improv, you know, growing up in Trinidad. We had, you know, there's some really, really amazing pan players back in, you know, back home, like the Len Bugsy Sharps and the Ken Professor Fillmores and the Robert Greenwiches. Actually, I didn't even know about Othello until I came to the States.
Hmm. That would be Othello Malo,
yeah,
who has a show on Sunday evening.
Yeah,
it's a whole big pan weekend here. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so when we were playing tunes, was like, I knew what it was, but didn't fully have the education as to who this was or that one, you know. So guys would call tunes, let's play this Miles tunes, Blue and Green, and oh, it's like, what? Miles who? You know? And a friend of mine's gave me kind of Blue album, and that sent everything off from there.
And the rest, as they say, is history.
Exactly. So, you know, I wore that record out.
I think it's time we heard some more of your forthcoming album. Call a tune for me, please.
Let's do this tune, Dub Plate Swing.
Let's see. Is that really number 7, or are we going to find out when
That's
we get there?
That's number 8.
That's number 8. Okay, talk about it for me while I drag up number 8.
Dub Plate Swing is an homage to reggae music. And when they say dub plate, they would pick like a popular bass line or popular rhythm, and all of the reggae artists would make a song out of it. And this is, growing up, you heard that doo-doom, doom, doo-doo-doo-doom, doo-doo-doom, doo-doom, doo-doom. And that was the whole thing. And then guys like Super Cat and Buju Banton and all these guys that you listen to would put their songs on it. So this is my take on dub plate, and I put a swing on it. So dub plate swing.
Thank you.
That's my guest tonight, Leon Foster Thomas. That's from his forthcoming album, Metamorphosis, Dub Plate Swing. And I guess if you've spent any time here with us on WLRN over the years, you probably know, even though he just explained, you probably know pretty much where that comes from. It's 11:23, and Leon Foster Thomas, it occurred to me, I wanted to ask, we were talking about how steel pans are made. I want to ask about your instruments. Where do your instruments come from?
My instrument was made by a guy by the name of Bertrand Kellman. He's one of the top tuners and pan builders around. Very busy, but one of the nicest guys that I know. If I need advice, especially within the steel pan world, I talk to him. He's just one of the greatest souls you can ever meet.
Is he here in South Florida or?
No, he's in Trinidad, actually.
That makes sense.
You know, but I use here in Miami. The guy that takes care of my instrument is Michael Kernahan. We call him Big Mike, and one of the best. He traveled the world with the band Tripoli when they traveled with Liberace, way back in the days.
There's a lot going on with the steel pan thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to do some more research myself. Speaking of traveling the world, I want to ask a little bit about what's on tap for you. You mentioned, I think, that you're headed back to Russia, and you've been traveling quite a bit. Tell us about your travels.
Within the last few years, I've been working with fellow Trinidadian ATN Charles, and we just did Trinidad, we did the Tobago Jazz Experience. Just recently, we did the Pittsburgh Jazz Festival last year, and the Tri-City Jazz Festival last year, and just been playing, and we did Savannah Music Festival not too long ago, and it's been fun. It's been fun. Just collaborating with him on many aspects. Such a talented individual. With myself, you know, doing my own thing. Now we're getting ready to, after these shows we're doing here in Miami, head to Atlanta in June, June 10th and 11th. And then we head off to Russia July 10th, 11th, and 13th. The 13th we're in St. Petersburg. And it's going to be some fun stuff because I haven't been there within the last 3 or 4 years. This is going to be good. It's always great to play over there.
It is a dream of mine to see jazz in Russia, but tell me about it from the musician's perspective.
It's one of the most amazing experiences you could ever experience. Every show for me, every show that I've done was pretty much sold out. And the people, they love it. They love jazz. I mean, Europe, the whole of Europe loves jazz. And it was just one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had, you know.
And I guess we're coming down toward the end of our conversation here, so let's go over it one more time. You have a gig, a concert, a pre-release concert, coming up on this Saturday, May 21st, showtime 8:30 p.m. That's at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center, which is at 10950 Southwest 211th Street in Cutler Bay. More information at smdcac.org, which reminds me that I forgot to tell the people about your website.
Oh, leonfosterthomas.com.
Does it get any more straightforward than that? Is there anything else you want my friends to know that I haven't asked you about?
Just follow me on the Twitter feed at Pan Foster, Instagram, just putting my name, everything Leon Foster Thomas. and just, you know, support the music. There's so many great musicians here in Miami, and everyone, this album is really from Miami. It's Miami based.
That's what we didn't do. We didn't name all the cats who are on the record.
Yeah, we should talk about them real quick.
We should do that.
Martin Bejarano on piano, Jean Kaz on trumpet, David Palmer on tenor saxophone and flute, Michael Pilot on drums, Fernando Ulibarri on guitar, really talented guy. Who else we got? John Deversa on trumpet. And electronic valve instrument, the EVI, and Sammy Figueroa, percussion. Am I missing anybody?
Kurt?
Kurt Hengstavik. How could I forget Kurt? Kurt has been on every record that I have recorded.
This is your third as a leader, right?
Yes. So we have Kurt and then myself on steel pan and percussion.
My guest tonight has been Leon Foster Thomas. His new album, Metamorphosis, comes out on the 3rd of June. If you attend his pre-release concert this Saturday night at the SMDCAC down in Culture Bay, I think I'm just going to call it that from this point forward, you can get a special pre-release copy because you'll be special. Foster, I guess I should ask you, all right, why Foster?
It's my father's last name.
Okay. That'll do it. Leon Foster Thomas, steel pan virtuoso. Please pick a tune for us to finish up with here. Number two, that is...
Cry of Hope.
Thank you. I'm glad somebody knows. Talk about it while I get it together.
Cry of Hope is just one of those hard-hitting, pretty much more for a big band, but we've really hit hard and let all the musicians express themselves, so... This is hard. Cry of Hope, actually.
And
so.
When the Leon Foster Thomas Big Band is assembled, we can expect this on that album.
You can bet that.
Foster, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you very much.
One more from Leon Foster Thomas from the forthcoming album Metamorphosis. Again, Foster has a performance this Saturday night, 8:30 p.m. at the SMDCAC. That's the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center.